Today's episode of Sports Spectrum's podcast is presented by our new football show, Sports Spectrum's Weekly Slant. It's the only faith and football show around. You can check it out Wednesday nights, 8 p.m. Eastern at sportsspectrum.com or on our Facebook and YouTube channels. It streams right there. It's free. And again, it's football and it's faith. It's the only one of its kind out there. Sports Spectrum's Weekly Slant. Check it out Wednesday nights, 8 p.m. Eastern, and streaming throughout the week and into the weekend at sportsspectrum.com.
Welcome to Sports Spectrum, where we bring Jesus back into the conversation. Here's your host, former ESPN producer, Jason Romano.
And welcome to the show. I am Jason. This is Sports Spectrum. We are the intersection of sports and faith. We're so glad that you tuned into the show today. Have a great conversation coming your way with Drew Maddux. He is a former college basketball player at Vanderbilt, a four-year starter, was a former first-team All-SEC, an All-SEC freshman team member as well, and an All-SEC academic team member as well. And in the mid-2000s, after finishing up his college basketball career, he began serving as a broadcaster with Comcast Sports, Fox Sports South, and others. Also served as a radio host on 104.5 The Zone in Nashville. Now, Drew really made his mark, in my opinion, by coaching high school basketball at Christ Presbyterian Academy in Nashville for 15 years. Since 2006, he won two state championships in 2012 and 2013, 10 district championships, and even had an NBA first-round pick that he coached. Drew is also an author. He released a book in 2020 called Elevated, a book on being the best version of you. Drew also, you're going to love this. Drew also has become a trick shot master a la Dude Perfect. He tells that story. He tells the adoption story that he has from Uganda with his two boys. He tells about following in the legacy of his father and his grandfather and what it's like to coach at a Christ-centered, others-focused organization with Christ Presbyterian. I loved Drew Maddux. Tons of wisdom. Coaches, parents, athletes, if you're listening right now, pay particularly close attention to what he has to say later in the show about coaching and about the advice that he would have, the encouragement he would have for students who are potentially being recruited to play sports. This is Drew Maddux. Loved this conversation with Drew. It's right now on Sports Spectrum. Drew Maddux, welcome to Sports Spectrum, sir. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, Jason. It's an honor to be with you today, and certainly appreciate you having me on.
Absolutely. There's so much we can talk about with you and your journey, basketball playing career, coaching, leadership, trick shots, I am second, broadcasting. So we'll do our best to kind of hit on as many of those things as possible. But before we go into those, let's learn a little bit about your journey. I read your desire to play basketball at Vanderbilt began when you were just a little kid. Is that right?
Yeah. That is accurate. And when you list all those things, does that basically mean I'm just a jack of all trades and master of nothing? Is that what you're saying?
I don't know. I'm not saying anything.
Yeah, I'm teasing. It started at an early age. My father and my grandfather both played basketball at Vanderbilt, Jason. Grew up here in Nashville. And the vision of that and what that school represented was downloaded into my heart and into my spirit at a very, very early age. So much so, I was sitting in Miss Sandy's kindergarten class at Nanny Berry Elementary School in Hendersonville, Tennessee. She asked, as a lot of those kindergarten assignments would, what do you want to be when you grow up? Draw a picture of what that would look like. And my friends were drawing pictures of astronauts and firemen and policemen and those kind of things. And I drew myself in a Vanderbilt basketball uniform wearing the number 45. My father had wore 45. I'd seen pictures. Even as an early kid, I could remember that image in my head. And so, yeah, that image and that piece of paper, I kept on my dresser my entire life as a reminder of who I was hoping, you know, I was aligning every single day of who I was becoming. And certainly wanted to do that. I was driven to do that. some days that was really good, and some days it was really hard, because it allowed me to have to face adversity and struggle, and some days that was not fun. But it also was, very, very good in my story that it provided a lot of discipline on those days when you didn't have your best.
Yeah. I mean, that's high level college basketball. So it's a thing to have a dream, but a lot of people don't get to accomplish that dream, even though the lineage has your grandfather, your father, and then eventually you. Tell us about what that was like, because we have a lot of coaches, we have a lot of athletes that listen to this show. And I think sometimes, you know, athletes don't fully understand what it takes to get to that highest level. They think talent alone should just be the calling card for them, but it requires a lot of work. What was that like? Kind of take us and describe that a little bit on the work, because it's one thing to have your parents or your dad and your grandfather play there, but that doesn't automatically mean that you get to play there either. So there was a lot of hard work involved, I would imagine.
Absolutely. And I do believe, you know, God did gift me to play basketball. I had obviously a prerequisite set of foundational skills, right? So even early on, I recognized that I was gifted. I was able to do it. But as you said, I was very much addicted to the process. Like I love the process. I love the journey of being blue collar, of what hard work, what you learned about yourself and hard work on those days, like I said, when you didn't have it or you didn't feel it, but could you still make yourself get up in middle school and in high school and make yourself get outside or go do another extra set of lifting reps or get to the gym or whatever it took. So much so that I tell the story a lot of times, Jason, it drove me so much that I was determined just mathematically that, you know, there was 3 to 4 spots to play at Vanderbilt University. On an average, a basketball team has 12 scholarship players. If you just split that up amongst the 4 years, you know, as an incoming freshman, there was 3 or 4 spots up for grabs. Right. And I was absolutely gonna have one of those spots, and nobody was going to outwork me. So much so that I can remember being in my bed as a little kid and it being 9 or 10 o'clock. I mean, I'm talking about fourth, fifth, sixth grade and already starting to think this way. And knowing that on the West Coast, there was a 2-hour time difference. And so it was just 7 o'clock or 8 o'clock on the West Coast. And that meant somebody else could still be in the gym or somebody else could be on the blacktop. And I would get myself back up out of bed and put my shoes back on, even on cold winter nights, and get back out to my driveway and shoot more baskets because I was so determined that nobody was going to outwork me.
There's a downside to that too, though, right? Because the blessing is that you get to go to Vanderbilt, but you said the word addicted to the process. Yeah. And addiction can be a very toxic thing as well. Was there, or now can you look back and see some of the maybe toxic side or the bad side of being so obsessed with trying to achieve this goal?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I think a couple of ways to answer that question. Obviously, the first thing being, the process and being addicted to it drove a lot of performance identity in terms of how I live my days, and which also drove to perfectionism. And so when you fall short of that, how do you deal with that? How do you view yourself? How do you feel like others are viewing you as well? How do you receive love from other people, yet you feel like you failed them because you didn't perform to the levels that you thought you should? And so I really struggled with that. I mean, my whole identity was wrapped up in performance. And so that drove that addiction to the process even more. So on nights when you didn't play well, you know, staying in the gym after everybody had long gone home or staying in the gym over the weekend or whatever it took, because I had such a poor a view of myself on those nights when I struggled or when hardship or adversity hit, or more importantly, I really felt like others, felt less about me, including my own family members. And back to your point about the toxicity that exists in that, like that's a sickness, you know, to think that your performance in middle school and high school is carrying such a burden of how you receive love from other people, including your family members. Like I was very much held hostage to my performance game in and game out. And I remember those days of how hard it was. When you played well, it was great, right? I mean, it was so good, but on those days it was that you struggled, it was awfully difficult to deal with.
So where does the shift happen or the pivot happen where the identity crisis gets kind of handled? And obviously growing up in Vanderbilt and growing up in Nashville, I shouldn't say obvious, but I'm guessing faith was an important part of your journey from being a little kid. But at some point, the identity crisis that a lot of people in the sports world have takes a shift where you understand that your identity isn't just in your performance. When does that take place for you?
Yeah, I came to know the Lord when I was 12. I was baptized and had what I would call a real encounter with the Lord, where I gave up and said, I really can't deal with this hole in my heart, performance, trophies, accolade, recognition, being noticed is never going to fill it up enough. I need you, Jesus, and I invite you to get in the fight with me and release me from it. And so at the age of 12, I did that, but yet it really didn't, that relationship with Jesus didn't really have the impact or the change that I was really hoping for. And I continued through my high school career, my high school journey, but it really wasn't until I got to college, my freshman year at Vanderbilt, of really dealing with, just how hard it is to be a freshman athlete at a big time school and throwing my hands up that first semester and God aligned so many unbelievable people in my path that came into my journey that he really used as impact into my story. But it was really that first semester, my freshman year, where I really invited Jesus into it with me and just said, enough's enough. I can't deal with this on my own. I can't play well enough. I can't score enough. I can't have enough good days of practice. Jesus, I really, really got to have you be a part of this with me. And I surrender my life wholeheartedly, completely, 100% to you. And at that point, the amazing thing that started to happen, Jason, I played the best basketball the rest of those 4 years than I ever had my whole life because I had released that. I had become open-handed in terms of allowing my performance to really dictate how I lived.
And yet there's this dream that you are accomplishing as well, which you wrote about when you were a little kid. So it's funny how God kind of is in the details, even though he had to kind of shake you up a little bit to get that identity crisis worked out, but you get to live out that dream and play college basketball at Vanderbilt. So describe that. Describe what it was like to do that, to live out that dream, to follow in dad's footsteps, to follow in grandpa's footsteps, and get to play basketball with Vanderbilt.
Yeah, it was amazing. Especially in those days, this was pre-Tennessee Titans, pre-Nashville Predators. So every single night that we went into that gymnasium, it was magical. I mean, it was an incredible experience. In fact, they call it Memorial Magic. I mean, we did not lose in that building, getting to represent that university, getting to really play in front of the community I'd grown up in, in front of the Nashville community, so many relationships. I think the greatest blessing of it all to me, Jason, when I look back, not only fulfilling all of those things, fulfilling a dream, walking into the footsteps of family lineage, all of those wonderful opportunities and nights and experiences, great teammates, great coaches, great games, memorable. I think the thing that I remember the most was how it unified my family. My entire family, cousins of cousins, generations are all deeply tied to this area. And so on any given night, I would have, 60, 70 family members waiting for me after games. It just unified our family in a way. And in those days, both of my grandfathers were both dying of cancer. Mm. And I'll start getting upset about it. But it provided motivation and inspiration for them to get up out of bed, to get up and to try to survive and fight for another day. And if that was motivation for them, how dare me not give my very best back to them as being a recipient of the love that they were pouring out on me. And so I think that was the number one thing above all of it. And all of it was unbelievable. But the unifying force that it was for our family in those days, particularly as it related to both of my grandfathers walking through extreme difficulty, that's the thing that I'll take away the most during my time there.
Drew Maddux is our guest here on Sports Spectrum. Was there a struggle post-college for you to once again find that identity in something other than basketball? Obviously, you give your life to Christ, you understand who Jesus is and you put him at the center, but yet that's the sport that you're tied to since you were a little kid and now you're not playing anymore. Was there a sort of post-mortem, if you will, of having to walk away from playing the game of basketball?
Absolutely. 100%. I mean, you know, I think, you know, Jason, and as a coach, and I imagine we'll get into coaching here in a little bit, but yeah. You know, there's three false identities to manhood, and it starts at an early age that we start really buying into. And if you know anything about Joe Erman and Season of Life, or you've read any of his books, Inside Out Coaching, you know, starts on the playground as an early kid, the struggle for power and status amongst your peers, you know, the most athletic kid on the playground. And then it moves into, you know, your high school and your college years as it relates to your performance, the type of girl you date, your popularity, all of those things, you know, somehow make me more of a man than you are in the eyes of the world. And so obviously after you get done playing, what's the next thing that you start to reach and drive for? And that's in the business community. So, you know, it's either through your title or how much money you can make or what your commission check says or whatever those things are. So it just shifted. And so then it became, you know, what can I do in the business community? Even at an early age out of my college experience, it was like, I have to leapfrog some steps because I got to keep this feeling going of what I really like, which is people's approval, people knowing me, people knowing who I am when I walk into a room. And so that was the next thing that you place your energy into. And it was very difficult to deal with post-career, not having, you know, basketball anymore. And then what is the new Drew? Who is the new Drew? Does he have something to offer of value outside of just performing? And so that was very difficult to deal with.
And it's interesting that you went into the field of broadcasting where you can keep your name in the game. You right. can keep your name out there for people to know. And yet kind of what you just described, you know, that approval and that, hey, everybody knows who you are, kind of, you know, the motto from Cheers, right? The show where everybody knows your name. But you're a broadcaster and you're doing really well. You're doing games as an analyst. You're doing radio work and you're a sports talk show host in Nashville. So what was that transition like? Because right after that is when you went into coaching. And that's where I really want to dive deep into, because I think when you coach, that's a different level of pouring into others and taking yourself out of the equation. And there's so many lessons that we learn, especially on this show, from talking to coaches. But that transition ends up into the broadcasting world, which eventually then ends up into coaching. So kind of take us through that.
Yeah, I think, you know, just the gift of sport had been such a blessing in my life. And it was like, okay, now what do you do? I went into the business world, but yet I still wanted to stay tied to the game of basketball and had these wonderful opportunities. You know, just the afforded opportunities we have as college athletes to get great media training. You know, we had incredible people. Our sports information department really took an investment. I was a shy kid and very reserved when I came in to my experience at Vanderbilt, and I left so much more mature because a lot of that training. And so, yeah, broadcasting was just something that I really got passionate about. It kept me involved in the game. Obviously, I had great relationships with coaches and players. It kept me very hungry to continue to grow and learn, not only about the game, but about, you know, just people's stories. It gave you a connection point to people's story, which is something that I really love to learn about, just what makes other people great, what makes other great people great. And so guessing gave you that platform to do it, but it kept me in the game. And I always thought maybe coaching would be something that I would eventually want to do, but broadcasting was a great bridge between my home career and my coaching career. And I'm thankful for that time because it kept my mind sharp, kept me in the game, and it kept those relationships alive.
And you end up coaching at Christ Presbyterian for 15 years. You're coaching high school kids. I also think there's a real unique dynamic because just the name, Christ Presbyterian, means that you are able to do what we do, which is bring Jesus into the sports or to the basketball conversation. Tell me about that shift into coaching and then being able to see coaching as a potential ministry because of the place that you were coaching at.
Yeah, I think that's the key to the whole thing. I love that you brought that up because we always talked about, remember, member of the sea and CPA. Everywhere that we were able to go, you know, you were taking the name of Christ into, you know, every venue, any situation. And so we were going to pursue excellence with everything that we had, not so that we would receive glory, but to God alone be the glory for everything that we would do. And so going to Christ Presbyterian Academy was a real blessing, because I had had great coaches in my life, and I've also had some very poor coaches that did a lot of damage in my life as well. But I never was a part of a situation where Christ got to be a part of the locker room, and you could do it unapologetically. You know, you could bring those moments, those encounters, those stories. You could pray with your team, and you didn't have to worry about it. You had total freedom. And in fact, you were pushed by our leadership to do as much as you could possibly do, and let the gospel be the centerpiece of your program. And so it was a real blessing, because what we showed was, you know, a lot of times you thought of Christian schools as like cheaper athletics, right? Or you had great athletics and you had to cheapen Christ. And I thought the one unbelievable thing, and once again, it was a lot of people, great players, families, the leadership, a lot of resources that were placed far above and beyond my efforts. But we were able to bring both and be comprehensive of bringing Christ, but also being excellent, having a industry leading, first class, world class basketball program under the name of Christ, and do it at the highest level.
Yeah, you did. You did it at the highest level, because you won two state championships, had a lot of success there. We have a lot of coaches, as I mentioned earlier, that listen to this show. What's the encouragement that you would have for them, and how to reach and teach? Because I think it's both, and counsel 15 to 18 year old or 14 to 18 year old high schoolers, because that's such an interesting age. My daughter is 17. She's a senior. And her coach is fantastic in volleyball. She plays volleyball. She's a captain and starts on the team. But I watched like her peers, and not just her, but even the guys who play sports. And I'm like, man, it's such a tough age to kind of reach and teach, because they're so kind of like you were, right? Like so wrapped up in the performance issue. And the thing I love about Sarah's coach, my daughter's coach, is because he genuinely cares about each player and serves them. He's a believer too, which is nice, and he serves them. But what encouragement would you have for those coaches that might be listening and maybe don't coach in a Christian environment, but want to be the hands and feet of Jesus where they are?
Yeah, I'll first say this. You know, I've also been partnered with Nike for 12 years running basketball camps around the country. And so I clearly understand when it needs to be the gospel according to John Wooden versus the gospel according to the Apostle John. Like, that's right. You know, yeah. But there's still spiritual truths that ground us, right? So it's just disguised a little bit in the language by which you use, but there's still universal principles that should apply to every aspect of our life. And so, you know, our program was founded, Jason, on when Jesus was asked, what is the greatest commandment? And he said, to love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, all your strength, all your mind, and to love your neighbors yourself. So we built the foundation of the program on four words: Christ-centered, others-focused. And the first thing that we wanted to do was be unapologetic and let everybody know that we totally exist every single day to be a player's first program. And what that meant was the player was always going to be the most important. So it wasn't about us as coaches. It certainly wasn't about us as parents. It wasn't about us. It was totally about them and their experience. And we were going to wake up and give them our very best. With that came the next element to it, which was we built the program on the parable of the talents. Whether you were given 5, 2, or 1 talent, even the young man that was given 1 talent, he still has something of value and something of contribution and offering that the rest of the group desperately needs. He was uniquely and divinely made for such a time as this to make an investment in the group. And so one of the things that we do, we never did a cut. I never made cuts at our school. It was an all-comer. So if you came in my gym, Jason, sometimes some years we would have 40 kids practicing at one time. Wow. And people would be like, how do you do that? It actually made me a better coach, because I had to be very intentional about every kid's experience. And if you want to know about a coach, go ask number 40 and go ask number 1 how they feel about their coach. And you're going to get a pretty good answer and take the common denominator of their answers. And that'll tell you, you know, about the leader of the program. So then drop it down a level. And we started using language like purpose versus goal, fulfillment versus achievement, living out of our eulogy rather than your resume. And we literally would just bombard them with language of love, reinforcing those tenets. And the great connector that we had was the game of basketball to be able to do it. So I had captive hearts and minds in the room because of the game of basketball, but yet we were coming at them with this whole paradigm by which not only the way they should view themselves as a 14, 18 year old, but more importantly for who they were becoming as a man.
Hmm. I did read too, and I love that you said that. The one I wrote down was eulogy versus resume. I think that is so important. That's the, that ties you back to your performance versus your identity, right? And people aren't going to remember about what you did. They're going to remember how you made them feel, right? I always say people aren't going to care about how much you know until they know how much you care. Yeah. And that's a beautiful way to put it. I did want to ask you, because I read that you coached an NBA first round pick. Who was that? Who was the player?
Yeah, John Jenkins. John Jenkins, who was the 23rd pick of the Atlanta Hawks. Yeah. You know, and we had over, you know, in my 15 years, I don't know what the latest number ended up being, but we had 41 or 42. I need to go back and do a count. I've gotten a little rusty with my numbers, but, you know, we had a lot of kids going to play college, you know, big time college athletics.
Yeah.
You know, we did it collectively pursuing a goal, but yet if they had a dream and a desire to go play, just like John went on to become an NBA first round pick, but we celebrated every kid. If they wanted to go play at Emory or Indiana Wesleyan or Hampton Sydney, we chased that dream with them with everything that we had to leverage, everything that we had for the young man to go fulfill that dream. So it did not matter to us. If that was their dream, we were here to help facilitate that dream-making process.
So this question may be a little selfish because I got a nephew who is a really good quarterback playing football in high school. He's a senior down in Florida this year. He moved down from New York and he's down in the Orlando area. He's being recruited right now, just a little bit, 5-6 schools, some NAIA, Division III, Division II schools. I think he has the talent for a low D1. We'll see how it plays out. His team is very good. Talk to the kid being recruited. Maybe it's my nephew, but thinking about a wider audience that listens to this show. Yep. And what's some of the experiences, principles, advice you would have for those that are starting to get some looks? Maybe it's not the top level, right? Where it's the kid like who's going to be a first round pick. So, you know, like they're being recruited by the time they're in 9th or 10th grade, and it's going to be a high level as long as they stay healthy. But it's those middle ground kids that are talented who might have some opportunities, but it's such a stressful time. Even my brother right now, who's my nephew's dad, is like, Jay, it's just crazy. They're getting calls and we're trying to decipher what the right place to go and what's the best fit and all of these. What would you say to that person?
Yeah. First of all, I would release them of them. God's already has an unbelievable place designed and picked out, and it has been decided, you know, so that as a vision of what you will one day walk into. And now, you know, dial the clock back to today and start establishing those steps. So one, you know, we're always going to be very prayerful in the process of this. So any family that I walk through with this, we're going to be prayerfully considering it every day. We're going to be sold out to praying in a unified force together, me as their coach, them as their loved ones, the young man as a player. We're going to pray about it every day. We're going to be committed to it. Two is we're going to set up basically a strengths assessment. So I have a strengths inventory that as a sophomore, if you want to go on to play college athletics, you fill out. And so we start talking about what's my personal mission statement. What I will hopefully want to study, what career, when it stops bouncing and the ball is done and I can't play anymore, what makes me come alive when I start thinking about passions or contribution or strengths that I have? So we'll list all of those out. You know, we'll list, like I said, a personal vision and mission statement of who you hope to become. What geographies do you want to live in? We literally list all of that out on the left side of the page. And then on the right side of the page, we go through and do an inventory of all the schools that are realistically recruiting them. And then those we still dream. And so what are those schools that you want to dream about? Never stop dreaming, because I think that vision out in front of you allows you to have that urgency every day. Not that you're settling for those schools, but of the ones that are actually recruiting you. But I just think there's something in the dreaming process of it. So we're going to talk about the schools that you're dreaming about. And then we're also going to be very realistic. And I'll tell you this, Jason, the last thing for me, at least, in a world full of hype and social media, you know, that pushes a lot of this, I'm going to be a truth teller. I'm going to be a truth teller to them. I'm going to tell them exactly what I'm hearing from the college coach. And I'm going to be very truthful. And I ask for their permission on the front end to be very truthful, even with hard truth of where we are in the process. As somebody that cares for you, as somebody that loves you with no agenda in this, I'm going to be very truthful in telling you exactly what the reality of your recruitment is.
Man, that's so good. And I think the truth part is the most important part. And I love that you asked for permission up front. I think that's important too, because most of these kids, you could hear everybody talking the positives and talking them up, and it might not be really what's going on behind the scenes. And so, so important to hear that, Drew Maddux. The trick shots, I told you in the beginning, we were going to get there. How and when did that become a thing? Please.
Yeah. So if you've seen a picture of my family, I have three daughters and two sons. So I have five children. My youngest two are adopted from Uganda, changed our life. God used them to radically change our house, change the way I view life, been incredible blessings to us. Mm. But as little guys in third and fourth grade, like a lot of kids, they fell in love with Dude Perfect. We moved into a new house that had a pool in our backyard, and we put a basketball goal up, and they said, "Dad, do you think you can jump off the diving board and make a shot?" I was like, "I'm a shot maker. Of course I can make a shot, you know, no problem." So I jump off, I make the shot, and they said, "Oh, we have this iPad. Let's video it, and so we can send it to our grandparents." And so I got out, I did it again. They videoed it. We sent it to our grandparents. And then I posted it on my Instagram that day, the shot of the day.
Yeah.
And then it just became something. And that was summer of 2016. And then it became just something that we did every day as a family together in our backyard. Well, this is where it started to pick up a lot of energy and traction was the owner of the Omni Hotel here in Nashville said, "Our family is in love with your shots. Do you think you can come make one off our roof? We'll tape it and we'll create a media event and we'll have some fun with it."
Wow.
I said, I've never met a shot I didn't like. I don't know that I can make it, but we'll certainly go try it. And so we went downtown. It became a big news event. We made the shot. It hit Good Morning America. The video went viral, you know, and then it was off and running. So this is where it became very fun, though. So it was something we did with our family. And then I do Nike basketball camps every summer, every single week of the summer. And I started to do a shot of the week in front of the kids. So none of those shots are trick photography. They all have live audiences. And, you know, can do them pretty quickly, even break world records. We've done some fun, incredible stuff. And now those videos have been a great connector. It's the universal language that connects you to kids, regardless of gender, age, background. When you see something like that happen, you'll never forget you were there. And, you know, it just ultimately gives me a place to speak into their lives because they deposit respect into my account.
So do you practice these shots? Or is this something you're like, all right, they're knowing... I know that they're expecting the shot of the day. So I need to get up about a half hour early and get about 1,000 shots in beforehand.
Start getting the arm ready.
Yeah.
You know where it came from, Jason? And you'll remember this because we're roughly the same ages. Do you remember the old McDonald's commercial with Larry Bird and Michael Jordan in the old Chicago stadium?
Of course. Larry Bird's my basketball hero. So yes, of course.
Absolutely. My hero too. And so, yeah. You know, they're playing extreme horse. You know, throw it off of the ceiling, throw it through the window. So as a young kid, when we would go to the community center, we played horse, you know, like kids do, but then we would play extreme horse because we had seen that. So it just became something I could do. I could see angles. I could bounce it in. I could shoot it backwards. I just like learned the tricks of the trade all because of that commercial. And who would have known all of these years later that commercial, you know, is paying me back tenfold.
That's amazing. I love that commercial. I need to go to YouTube now and rewatch it as they're like sitting on the roof, Magic or Michael and Bird. It's just one of my favorite commercials. Yeah, McDonald's hit a home run with that one. I didn't know about the adoption story with your children from Uganda, but I'm fascinated with adoption now. And my brother Chris, who I mentioned, my nephew Caleb, he adopted a little girl, and so I love hearing adoption stories. Can you share yours real quick?
Yeah. Ours started, I coached a young man that came into our program at CPA. His dad is a Christian singer, Stephen Curtis Chapman.
Oh, yeah,
and,
of course.
So Will Franklin Chapman was the young man's name. They have a huge adoption ministry called Show Hope. And we just fell in love with foster care and adoption in the orphan crisis that was going on. So God really used their story to educate my wife and I and our family. Then we began to go on some trips, do some mission work in different, you know, parts of the world. We fell in love with a young lady named Katie Davis that was in Jinja, Uganda. She was 19 years old, Jason, and had an enormously successful feeding and educational program for kids in the villages. And so the adoption piece and foster care and the orphan crisis, we knew we wanted to jump in. We fell in love. God used this girl's story to shine a spotlight on this part of Uganda. So adoption met Uganda. And as God would have it, you know, he had two little guys for us that Patrick and Nicholas, and they have just been an incredible blessing to us.
That's a great story. So you coach for so many years as we wind down, Drew, and then you step away.
Yeah.
And it's funny because you and I were talking and I didn't know the full story because I was on your website and trying to decipher. I said, is he still coaching? I'm not sure. And I texted you, by the way, your humility is amazing because you were like, well, I'm not coaching anymore. So if you don't want to have me on your podcast, I understand. And I'm like, Drew, your story's enough. We're good here, man. Let's talk. But I'm curious to know kind of the background on leaving the coaching world. You're executive vice president now of a, I think it's a company or a group called People Development. So I'd love to hear kind of the decision-making process in going, because I understand pivoting from something that I've been in for many years and going into something else. It's not an easy decision. I'd love to hear kind of what went into that and how the Lord played a role.
Yeah, it was really hard, to be honest. And still, I'm in that liminal space still of what was known and what is yet to be known. And
yes.
But Jason, dear, it kind of goes back to COVID. I mean, during that time, just really praying as God gave us this time to kind of analyze and just see, you know, do you have more for me? Is there more people for me to coach outside of this locker room? Is there more opportunity to make impact? You know, I'd written two books and those books had gone on to become done really well and been successful and kind of started to open my eyes of different ways to connect to people in different demographics and different areas. So just praying and praying, and God brought a guy named Chad Spencer into my life. He's the CEO founder of a company called the Dufresne Spencer Group. We are the largest licensee of Ashley Home Furniture Stores. And he started to tell me about what he wanted to do in the lives of our 5,000 associates that work for us. And he said, Drew, I basically want you to come and choke out our people with love. Wow. I want it to be above and beyond our income statement, our balance sheet, their commission checks, their payroll checks. I want us to do amazing things in the lives of the people we serve. And I want you to come do it. And I was like, what? Like, you know, I wasn't looking for anything. And He said, just pray about it. Just start praying about it. I have this job, executive vice president, people development. And when I was writing the job description, I felt like I was describing you. And so, Jason, as I started to pray about it, we had more conversations. The Lord just continued to green light it. And there wasn't even a yellow light, much less a red light. Along the way. And so we prayerfully considered it for a long, long time. And it was a hard decision because I kept praying even to God, like, really, I'm not going to coach basketball anymore. Like that's really, he goes, oh, Drew, I got so many more people for you to coach. It's just going to look very differently. Yeah. And so what we're trying to do is be very different in big business. I mean, we're a $1 billion company and that's great. And that's wonderful. But that's on the transactional side. And we're wanting to move to the transformational side of what we can do in the lives of not only our team, but our guests. And then ultimately in all of those communities of all of those places where our stores are, how can we really start to transform these communities? And God's given us a real platform and an opportunity if we're going to continue to prayerfully consider it.
What an amazing title for a job. Vice President of People Development. Because I think every company should have that, because most companies, especially the big ones, and I've worked at some of the biggest ones, or one of the biggest ones, you know, I would say it's talked about, but developing people, not developing employees or developing their skills, but developing people, when you do that, you get people bought into the love, serve, and care model that my friend John Gordon talks about. And that to me is is what it's all about. And when you get these people to understand that somebody like Drew Maddux loves them and cares for them and wants to develop them as people, not just employees, they're probably going to be the best workers you ever had, because they're going to want to go to bat for you every single time, right?
That's exactly right. And we're already experiencing that. So I've been on a listening tour. I've been traveling around the country, meeting with our folks. I'm also spending 20 minutes. So like when I hang up right now, I have 10, 20 minute coach up sessions, what I call virtual coffees, with our store managers in all of these places, because ultimately, if you want to cascade culture down and develop people, you got to get to the store level, because 2/3 of your employees reside there. So I always, Truett Cathy at Chick-fil-A said this, if you want to get bigger, love better. And so if we want to get bigger and continue to be successful, we got to love our own team better. And so we're just going to be very intentional on how we do that.
That's really well said, Drew Maddux. Hey, thanks for joining us. Thanks for coming on the show. Glad that we could make this happen. Can't wait for everybody to listen and hear this. And as they do, if they want to reach out to you, I know at your website, right? DrewMaddux.com is the best place.
Yeah, CoachDrewMaddux.com. And then obviously, you know, just any of the social media stuff. And Jason, just thank you for all you're doing, man. I really appreciate your ministry as well. And it's an honor to get to be on your show with you.
Thanks, Drew. Yeah, hopefully maybe we can figure out a way to partner and work together at some point down the road. But Coach Drew Maddux, that would be great. CoachDrewMaddux.com is the website, and we appreciate you, Drew. Thanks. Okay. And a big thanks to Drew Maddux for joining us here today on Sports Spectrum. You can learn more at CoachDrewMaddux.com, CoachDrewMaddux.com. He's got some books that are available. He's got some coaching advice and kind of some background on his journey. I think he'd be great to connect with if you're a coach yourself, or if you're, you know, just a fan of sports, but maybe you have kids that are thinking about going into playing sports, not only at the high school level, but collegiately into the next level. Coach Drew Maddux could be a great resource for you. You can find him on Instagram and Twitter as well. And we appreciate Drew for being here today on Sports Spectrum. We thank you as well for tuning in and listening today to our program. If you're brand new to Sports Spectrum, we just want to say welcome. We'd like to give you a free gift. Here's what you can do. Go to sportsspectrum.com right now. That's our website, sportsspectrum.com. At the top, click that newsletter icon. And what you're going to be doing here is just putting your email address in. It signs up for one email a week, our weekly newsletter, to keep you up to date on all of the stories and articles and podcasts that we've posted throughout the week. But we also have a free gift. It's a 10-day daily devotional, an ebook PDF that comes to your email inbox, written by professional athletes. It's written by the athletes themselves, many names that you will have known and heard of. People like DeMario Davis from the New Orleans Saints and Adam Wainwright, the pitcher for the St. Louis Cardinals. These devotionals are written by them. And it's 10 days, maybe just a little quick resource that you can go through with your team or your staff. It's a PDF. You can get it for free by signing up at sportsspectrum.com. Sign up for our newsletter. Click the newsletter icon at the top. Put your email address in, and you're good to go for that free 10-day devotional available at sportsspectrum.com. Thanks so much again for tuning in to today's show. Do us a favor. Click that subscribe button as well on whatever app you're listening to this so that you never miss an episode of Sports Spectrum's podcast. And then tune in next time right here on the show for another conversation on the intersection of sports and faith. My name is Jason Romano. We love you guys. Have a great rest of your day, and we'll see you again next time.